Hello and welcome to the Selfish Podcast. In today's episode, we have Jonathan Harkin, who I'm excited to get to know and find out more about him, his life, his journey. So welcome, Jonathan. Can you share with myself and the audience, where in the world are you and what time of day is it for you?
Yes, Luke, thanks for having me on. And I'm currently based in Dubai. I just arrived back in Dubai for my 7th year here last week, and it is currently 6 o'clock in the evening.
I know 7 years. I'm very curious to know more about that and that journey, because that's a long way. I'm going from Ireland by the accent, so it's a long way from there, and how that all came to be. But we'll get to that first. I like to go back a lot further with my guests to really get to know them personally and find out about their childhood. So can you paint me a picture, and for the audience, what was life like for you, say, pre 10 years old?
Jesus, pre 10 years old, that's a question I've never really been asked, but great childhood. Grew up in the northwest of Ireland in a place, county called Donegal, in a really rural place called Gweedore. It's an Irish speaking, Gaelic speaking area, but it's literally, and I'm not being biased here, it's literally paradise on earth. You know, you have the sea, you have the islands within a mile of the sea. You can kayak or swim out to the islands. People maybe 60, 70, 80 years ago lived out on those islands and then moved into the mainland. But now you see their grandchildren actually going back out and building houses and making them summer homes, because during the summer, or when the weather is good, now we don't often get good weather, but when the weather's good, we have the sea, the islands, the green fields, the beaches, the mountains for climbing the mountains. We have one of the highest mountains in Ulster. So it's just it's a fantastic tourist attraction, but it's literally the pace of life there is just so, I love it. And then the fact that everybody knows each other in such, you know, a parish of a couple of thousand people, and everyone's there, everyone has each other's back to a certain extent. You know, it's just a great place to have grown up. And like where my particular house was, great views, tight-knit family. Like my cousins are like my brothers and sisters. Great crack, great banter with aunties, uncles, mum and dad, visitors always coming in. I think when I, like, obviously before I was 10, I don't know what age it stopped, but mum always had a B&B in our house, so we always had characters coming in and out, whether it be mum and dad's friends or strangers coming to stay in the B&B. It was always a house full of life. So it was great upbringing, I must say.
Yeah, it's got to be quite interesting as well to see different people, like especially when you're from a place, like you said, that's got a smaller population, and you're getting people, I imagine, from all different places coming in to visit your town. So it's quite a different experience when you're a child. I'm actually, my nan's Irish. She's from Connell. It's about, I think it's like an hour from Cork in the southeast. And all my Irish side of the family, humour is a very big part. So when you're saying about the banter and stuff, that seems to be, from what I've seen, a very popular Irish thing. It's a very bonding experience through jokes that I experienced. Yeah. But I didn't get to see Ireland a lot. When I was younger, I went there, I think, twice. But I've always wanted to go back and really see more of it, because I don't know, such a faint memory. All I remember is green. You know, it's not more than that. Green and some family that were really friendly, but hey, I really want to see it again one day.
That's actually a question I wanted to ask you, because I picked up when listening to a few of your podcasts that you said on a couple that you had that Irish connection. So I wanted to ask you, where is that Irish connection coming from?
Yeah, so that was my nan. That was on my mum's side. So her mother, she came over from Ireland. I'm not sure what age, because my mum was born in England. So she must have come over in her, I imagine, 30. She's passed now, so I'm not able to ask, but maybe I can ask one of my aunts. Maybe they'll be able to let me in on that. But yeah, I'm not sure at what point she came over, and I'm not sure why. I know my granddad, he was English, so I don't know if they met. He was in the war. They might have met around that, like after that time, and she might have come to live with him, I think, but I'm not sure. Yeah. What was school life like where you was? Did you enjoy school?
I was really studious. Like, I actually, just when you asked me that question, I actually remember, I have memories of play school. That's where, like, I guess people call it kindergarten, and I don't know, crash, but we called it play school. But I do have vivid memories of being there with my cousin, who I consider a brother, and all my friends, and like having a great time there. And it was like in my town or parish, there's four or five small primary schools. So like now, like say living in Dubai, if you walked into say a grade one corridor, there's 130 children, where in my primary school, you were lucky to get, I'm guessing, maybe 60 to 80 children throughout the whole school. So classes were very small. So maybe there was six boys and six girls in each class running down through the whole school. So it was quite interesting. We were all friends. We were just busting out to play football on the tarmac every day. My grandmother would pick us up from school, me and my cousin. She actually picked us up from school every day from probably play school until the end of high school. And could you imagine, like at the end of high school, I remember she used to like park her little, granny car in between the two buses outside our classroom, and she'd be beeping just to embarrass us, because like the high school or the secondary school obviously had all the primary schools coming together, so there'd be a lot more students. And when you're a teenager, you don't want to be embarrassed by family and stuff, and having your grandmother there every day beeping the horn when you're coming out. It's funny now looking back, but I probably caused a bit of embarrassment back at the time.
Yeah, no, I remember that, and friends as well. When you're in secondary school, and that's like from 13 to 16. I think it's 18 now. But when you're there, and like you said, there's a different feeling in how you feel about others are thinking about you, and you're sort of reflecting on all sorts of judgments and different things. And it's funny how a parent can feel like a source of embarrassment at that time, no matter what they do, really.
Well, I don't think that the thought of, like, even as adults now, definitely you're thinking, we're always thinking, oh, what do they think of us? We're overthinking and everything. I don't think that immediately hit me when I went into high school, because I remember going into high school, we call it Pubblescal in Irish, and I had a shaved head, like a bear blade shaved head. And I got the shaved head because I was a big fan of Celtic. And there was Henrik Larsson was playing up front with a shaved head, and there was Bobo Balde playing in defense with a shaved head. So I got a completely shaved head.
That like razor shaved, like smooth.
So like I only seen a picture of myself this summer when I was up with my auntie and uncles for a barbecue. And in later years, mum told me, I think the teachers asked her, was I sick? Did I have like cancer or something? Like, where is this guy coming with the big bald head? But thank God I wasn't in any thinking of any judgment back then.
For me, it actually came in really early. I remember it was in middle school, but I had a really, you might have heard it on the other podcast, a really weird upbringing. My mom suffered severe schizophrenia, and she was the one, like, we came from a fairly big town. The population was over 100,000, between 100 and 150. And she would be on the streets talking to herself, shouting, sometimes dressed in her nightwear, just walking about. And it was lots of sort of where my middle school was near to my home. So she would hang around the shops and walk around, and she was begging and doing all sorts of things that were like abnormal. And I had sort of knew that other kids must know that that's my mother. And that caused me to be really hyper aware of just life itself. But I was really questioning what people thought of me. And then there's a period where, like, I had troubles and was had to live in a caravan for like 6 months and go to school. And then they put me on a social worker, and then the social worker came into school, and I was like, ah, what, don't, I don't want kids to know that I'm got this social worker. And he's taking me out into the playground, and I don't know if it's normally the same in most schools. You've got all the classrooms, and then the playground's there. So if you're in the playground, everyone in the classrooms can see you. And I would get taken out of class to play with the social worker in the middle of the playground on my own. And it was such an uncomfortable feeling. And I was like, this isn't making me feel good. This isn't helping. And I remember reflecting back on it later and being like, that was bizarre. And I know why I felt weird, because that doesn't seem like a sensible thing to do. But that started for me, like, just really hitting it. Then secondary school was in another borough within the same town, and it was all new people. So I felt like a fresh start, but I was like, really conscious of like, what if they find out this? What if someone from my old school tells them this? So that really was a sort of plague on me when I was younger.
Interesting story, interesting story. I've heard it on a couple, I heard you tell a couple of different angles on it, but every time you say it, it's kind of amazing because, not everyone has that experience, and it's kind of like something you see on TV or movie, so you can't really feel for the person or know what they've gone through unless you've actually experienced that
And
yourself.
I never met, apart from my brother, obviously, I never met another person who's been in that situation. And I've met lots of people that have mental illness because I went with my mother to many different hospitals and you see other people there, but for the most part, their family had sort of let go of them or they never had kids, and it was just the nurses and doctors looked after them, but they didn't have family. So you didn't ever have anyone to talk to about it or to reflect with it. And it is a very rare thing. And back then, anything to do with mental health, if she was in a wheelchair or had a broken leg, everyone would understand the issue. But back then, it was like taboo. You couldn't even talk about it. And if you said mental health, people just didn't understand. It's just crazy. And it was just, and the most you saw was on TV. You'd see, like in an American film, there'd always be some woman pushing a shopping cart, talking to herself and shouting. And that's like the closest representation that she was like. But yeah, very, very bizarre, very unrelatable to everyone else. I now see it as a gift. It gave me a very different perspective of life. Like you said, not many people have. I never thought I'd even be talking about it. And I couldn't talk about it. I literally, if I was to say my mother's ill, I would break down, stutter the words, cry, like just couldn't come out for years. It felt like I was giving people pain if I was to share it and feeling it all again myself. So it took time. It was a process to actually change my perceptions and feelings towards it.
And like what you said there, but back then there was that kind of stigma or whatever. Like I believe that generation still has that stigma, especially I can see, you can see it amongst both genders, but especially amongst men, older men. They're, when I'm asked, what do you do if you mention mindset or mental health? Oh, you're doing that head stuff, are you? You're that head something to do with the head. Like, they're like, okay, cop on. Just get on with it, man. Like there's no, like they're afraid to. It's just probably bedded into them from, say, their parents and their parents before them. But like, I feel like this is the first generation that's actually properly breaking down those walls, and people are actually looking after each other, or finding it easier to reach out for help, or talk to someone, or know that they can't just go through or struggle through on their own, and things can be done about it. It's not something that's going to be branded on you for life. Like you can sort it out.
And I think a big part for them, I think it's what's the benefit for us now is literally things like we're doing now. It's part of the reason I created the podcast, started sharing on YouTube. It's the ability to connect in that instant, to share something personal that's helped you can help someone else. And that's now just multiplying so fast because you can do it so quickly and from all different aspects of life all over the world. Whereas their generations didn't have that and they're only just sort of like a little bit using technology now compared to we are. But I think also after the sort of war, that stiff upper lip, as they would say in the UK, and there was this thing of like you keep your feelings to yourself, you just power through. So if life's hard, you don't talk about it, you just carry on, and you don't express it. So you like train yourself to be cold and calculated. And I think a lot of the generations came from that. If you're to open up in any way, you're sort of weak. And I think there's a lot of that in the slates, especially in the males and even some females, but it's definitely something that's changing. And I've seen an immense change since just my lifetime to the point of just hearing other people and like people like yourself talking about it. So yeah, it's incredible that it is changing.
Sure, like even you can look back at like probably I'm not painting everybody with the same brush, like maybe a couple of generations ago, but like especially in Ireland still, obviously there's a big drinking culture. But like if you're suppressing everything, like it has to get released some in some form. Like so could like people were releasing it through going on an alcohol binge, or getting aggressive, or like just not knowing how to express how they were feeling. So the only way they knew how was to have an argument that they didn't want to have with a loved one, or going on the beer for a couple of days, or just having that release valve, but like probably not healthy release valves, where these days people are aware of their triggers, or maybe they're not, but like they're aware of the triggers, they're aware of what can throw me off track, but they're also aware of what they need to do to get them back on track rather than this is life and let's get on with it.
Yeah, and I think a message that I started sharing when I first started my YouTube channel before the podcast, which was like at the beginning of COVID, so about 2 years ago, was I thought I'd just share the possibility of hope, of change, of growth, you know, that things can change at least. Because I think that's for a lot of people. It's like if you've got something, that's it. That's the way it's going to be. That's the way it's always going to be. And there's no possibility of like, there's no one really shining a light in their life to let them know that things can get, they can change. And it's not always that you're, for me, it's not always that your circumstances externally have to change for your internal to feel, to start changing and to feel better. And I apologize for the wind. It's very windy. It's shaking my laptop, my camera. And if I'm doing this, it's trying to block the mic.
No, that's fine. You can't hear the wind at all.
Yeah. And so I talked about my early childhood stresses. What was sort of the first thing that comes to mind to you? Not necessarily the worst or anything, but what comes to mind when I said, what was like an early struggle in your life?
Early struggle, I was probably A1 throughout my teenage, because at teenage years I was like very active, very like playing a lot of soccer and Irish football at the same time, like, so I was always on the go. And like even now, like if I don't train regularly, like I can see a massive effect on my mental health. Like I went home for 6 weeks for the summer, looking forward to it so much. But at the same time, from going home, like the last couple of weeks, I was really out of routine. I wasn't getting up. I wasn't eating the foods I usually eat throughout the year. You know, because I was home, I was able to like, yeah, let's go out and have a couple of pizzas, or, you know, let's overindulge in this, that, and the other. You're seeing your friends that you only see once a year. So we'd go out drinking Friday, another friend Saturday, Sunday. But I'm in holiday mode here. So like it's not registering at the time. But then for the last couple of weeks, I found myself like really kind of sleeping in longer on the Monday and like feeling down and just like putting on a bit of weight from not exercising, from that excessive kind of lifestyle. Like, and you know, coming back to Dubai, I was a shell, like not in a major way, not in a major way, but like in my own head, I was like, the inner critic was just screaming. Like the first couple of days of this week, like the difference between Monday and now today's Saturday, the difference between my mindset and my headspace between Monday and now is just two completely different people. But it took till Wednesday evening to start kind of turning that corner. Thursday, back on the ball, Friday, yeah. Then today, like today is probably what I consider a perfect day. Like, you know, I got up, had breakfast with my girlfriend. I went to jiu-jitsu. I came home, made a bit of food, bought like proteins and healthy food, did a bit of work on the laptop, watched football, went for a walk. On the call with you, I'll be doing a little bit of work after with my own clients. I'll be going to the gym, and that's a perfect day. Whereas 2 weeks ago, I was probably waking up from the night before and going straight to the pub with my friends, which I loved, don't get me wrong, but I just needed to identify that I can't, maybe I'm just getting old or something. I can't do it anymore. Like it has a negative effect on my body, on my head, and just me overall as a person. Like, so for me to be the best I can be, like I need to kind of nip that in the bud when I'm home. Now I'll be home again and I'll be doing similar again. Like when I meet my friends and stuff, like we will be going out and getting together and having great crack, but it's just knowing where to kind of draw a line in the sand. You don't have to like do every night. You don't have to go out this early. You can eat healthy as well. You can still exercise and just kind of plan for that. And don't let myself get to that headspace or let myself go like that again. Like I'm a big believer in, I had to reflect back on my summer on three different occasions this week. On Monday and Tuesday, it was a disaster. On Wednesday, I was like, actually, I got all my work done. I did a running challenge. I got to visit friends and family. I got to go do things I wanted to do. Like, that wasn't a bad summer. And then, like Tara says, like, all right, yeah, I had a few maybe extra nights out, but I'm getting married next year. That's probably the last summer I ever have the opportunity to do that. That was a fantastic summer. So it's funny how like a couple of days and getting your team back in action can do so much for just your outlook on everything. And like where I was going there with the bar, like I always believe you should have a bar set for every kind of aspect of your life, whether it's your like health and fitness, your finances, your relationships, or whatever. Like, I see, say, for example, footballers who used to play for my local football club who are now 50, and they obviously have like a dad bod, let's say, but they don't have a dad bod because they're 50. They have a dad bod because when they were 20 and 30, they were training 3 nights a week and playing a game on a Sunday. Then when they were 35, 40, 45, 50, they're not training 3 nights a week and having a game on a Sunday. That exercise is gone. So that bar has dropped, which allowed the dad bod. Like, this is a weird example, but if you turn that, say, for example, in your relationship, when you start going out with someone, like you're having date nights every week, then you go into the comfort zone and you don't have that date night maybe once a month. So your bar's dropped. So if you know like what your bar is, for example, 50 press ups, or say, let's say 50 press ups each Friday. But like if you skip a Friday and skip another Friday and then you try and do press ups after once, you can only do 20, you let your bar drop. But if you know where your bar is at for everything, you can always kind of test out once a month or once every week where your bar is at, that you know you're there. You can always push your bar up, but just try not to allow yourself to go underneath that bar. And I feel like that was my kind of learning from the summer. I let myself slip underneath a couple of the bars that I set myself.
Yeah, no, it's a good analogy with the bar, because I was thinking when you said it as well, like, I don't think it's a getting old thing. I think it's actually a growth thing. You've grown through your journey and what you've done, so your state of awareness is heightened. So when you then lower that state, you feel it more because you're just aware more. So you're able to actually go, right, wait, I feel what this is doing to me. Whereas when we're younger, we can do things and see other people doing things, and they're not actually aware that they've been slower for a week, they've been less productive for the days after, they've had arguments, they've had all these obstacles arise that they don't associate with the activities that they've participated in. It's just like, I woke up feeling that way today. That's just life, you know. And it's not, whereas it seems you had a say of where you're like, wait, I realized that's because I was here, done certain activities, and I feel here. Like I said, and then because of what you do, you've got the tools and techniques to just bring yourself back into that place that you need to be quicker. Yeah. So I want to know, with your, you said you're in Dubai. I'm really interested to find out the story of how that happened, and I'm really interested to hear a bit about like what the last 2 years has been like, and if you were sort of quarantined in Dubai or what was going on. I know nothing about how they dealt with the situation, but first, can you just share what, how did you end up in Dubai, and was that a dream, a plan, or spontaneity?
I was definitely not a dream or a plan. So my girlfriend, my fiance, at the moment, we met each other when we were 13, 14 in the secondary school at home. We live maybe 10 minutes, 15 minutes away from each other. So we started going out with each other then, and we went our separate ways when we were probably 18 or 19, went to college and whatever. And but we kept in touch and we kept in contact, and anytime we were home, we might meet up, different things like that. So we always kept in touch throughout the years, and we were really best mates. And although we might not see each other for a couple of months or whatever, so she rang me one day and she told me that she was going to Dubai to work, and I was just what is it, jaw smacked, is it, or jaw dropped, whatever, speechless. Because I was like, right, well, if she's going to Dubai, if I can't get back with her and she's in the same country as me, how am I going to get back with her and she's in a different place, different country? So I was speechless. And then so for that year, then I started finishing off my teaching degree. in the with the goal in my mind to go out and teach in Dubai, for because I knew a couple of guys from my local town who were teaching in Dubai. So I was trying to get a job, nothing happening, and then like the week before the schools opened, I got offered a job in Abu Dhabi, so I just took it. Went into that job in Abu Dhabi, and so I kind of tried to let her know I was in the country, but it took a while to get back in the good books, let's just say that, for maybe a year or two. But then eventually got talking to her properly, and I must have said the right things, and we got back together. So we haven't looked back. We've been living together in this particular apartment for the last 4 or 5 years, and we're getting married next summer.
Oh, nice. Well, congratulations. And that's a nice story, you know, to meet up so young and to like sort of be back and forth the whole time. And it sounds like you always had a sort of inkling that you wanted something longer the whole time, to travel that far to sort of make sure you didn't lose her out of your life. So I wish you both all the best. And is she a teacher as well? Is that what she went to do?
No, she's actually she's a qualified biomedical scientist, and she actually moved out here to take a break from that. So she's working for Emirates, the airline. Mm. So she's been all over the world. She's seen everything from the Great Wall of China to Rio de Janeiro. So what I keep asking her is, when I'm going to travel the world, who's going to come with me? Because she's seen everything. But I'm sure she'll have no problem taking a second story around.
You've got someone to show you the best places, so you don't have to avoid some of the mistakes you can make on your first travels.
Yeah.
And so I saw now that you're a mindset coach. How did that come to be? And are you teaching and doing that, or did you sort of transform into that? How did that come to be?
It's kind of when I first came out to Abu Dhabi, like I started like through my 20s, like since college, I went through like probably waves of struggling. Like I was through my 20s, I was partying a lot, like any other of my friends, or maybe a bit excessive compared to some of my friends, but you know, I was partying a lot, maybe gambling, or not gambling, because I was never gambling on a horse or football. I was playing a lot of poker. That was my main base, like playing poker in the local pubs around home. And it was, to be honest, essentially just to pay my way through my teaching year, because we were getting paid like 30 euro or 40 euro a week. And I had to buy my own stuff for the classroom, and this wasn't sustainable. Like how am I even going to have a pint with my friends at the weekend on this kind of money? So my logical thinking behind it was like, okay, there's a game on Sunday that's 20 euro or 10 euro in. If you can win, you win 100, and that there's a game tomorrow then for 20 euro, and if you can win there. So luckily I had a couple of wins that kept me going throughout each month. But so like through my 20s, I was like kind of in and out of fitness. I always kind of describe myself as, you know, Ricky Hatton, the boxer, in terms of his weight. Like I could get in the shape of my life, but then in 2 months' time, I'm blowing up. And there was a lot of stages where I couldn't get out of bed. I'd spend weeks in my bed. Like I was just in a bad place, waving in and out of it. Exercise was a big thing to pull me out of it. But then obviously looking back, like excessive of overeating and drinking and stuff like that, and just where my mind was at, pulled me back into like a dark place. So it kind of, Abu Dhabi gave me a new lease. I was back good shape, playing football, enjoying it, but then kind of spiraled out again, like drinking every weekend with the guys from the football team. And again, that just put me back into a dark place. And a few things happened that year, and it just came to a boil where one night, and like, it's funny because I'm almost like, I'm not embarrassed, but, or like, I can't say like I'm sick of telling the story, because like people kind of be, or you tell them that story again. One night everything came to a boil, and like I took myself down to the side of the motorway, and I was thinking to myself, right, you know, you're there's no point you being here because you keep fucking up. So I was like, you're as well to jump out, you know, walk out in front of those. There was lorries passing over and back. And thankfully, I had my football with me, and I just turned around with my football, went back up to my apartment. And that's kind of essentially where my kind of personal development journey started. Luckily, this was at a time, and it was close to the summer, so I had something to look forward to. I was going home. I think that was a big kind of decision in my subconscious, because you know, you hear when people are like older people are sick, but they usually hang on at Christmas because they know someone's coming home. They have something to look forward to. Yeah. And like they let go or pass away then early in the new year. Like there's some kind of studies or psychological, there's studies behind that. But I think that was in my subconscious. And then, you know, I went back that summer, and that summer then that was the first like inkling I had of maybe getting back with my girlfriend. So that was something to look forward to then and something to work towards. And that September I started buying personal development books, and kind of I always had a big interest in, and still do, in like sports people and how their mind works. And now listening to, like, for example, the High Performance podcast, how these high performance, how their head works. And I guess I try to cop myself on a little bit, but I was still falling back into old habits. You know, old habits die hard. Like you could say, like in the last 6 weeks in the summer, I was back in old habits, but I was able to kind of, I have the tools and techniques now from coaching to be able to pull myself back a lot quicker than leaving myself in a bed for 4 or 5 weeks. But during COVID then, we were locked down here in Dubai in this one bedroom apartment, me and my girlfriend. And to be honest with you, like, I know, like, maybe it's not fair saying, because a lot of people struggled during COVID and stuff like that, but I had the best time of my life locked up in this little box of an apartment with my girlfriend. We got in the best shape in our lives. We had great, you know, great nights cooking, watching Netflix, chilling a couple of months. Like, and it was surreal here too in Dubai, because there was massive, huge, like helicopter nearly sized drones outside your windows, like making sure, like you had to get permission to go down to the shop by like a text. And it was really militant at the beginning, but then all of a sudden Dubai was open. As long as you wore a mask, like Dubai was really ahead of the rest of the world. But during that time, a really, really, really good friend of mine, he rang me. I haven't been speaking to him in years. And he rang me. He was going through a major life crisis. And I was just giving him advice, you know, over WhatsApp Messenger or whatever. And it just came natural. And we were still in lockdown, and my girlfriend was on the couch listening. And she's like, you know, you're giving that dude really good advice, which I know you're, you know, looking to transition into a different career. Would you ever consider doing something along those lines? And I guess the algorithm must have picked up on that, because when I was flicking through my phone, like Life Coaching Academy and all these things were coming up like immediately. So I like clicked into it, and I did some kind of course that takes, you know, you can do it in a couple of hours. It's, you know, a starter. And from there, it just kind of kicked off. Like I went and did my accreditation in coaching. I'm just after finishing my master's in NLP. I'd done a couple of courses through the Royal College of Surgeons in Ireland on the psychology of positivity. So like I'm kind of slowly building up a bank of certificates and accreditations, and going to follow that route. Like I'm going to constantly learn. I'm looking to do a master's in something to do with positive psychology next year. So it just slowly built up like that. But it's amazing how it just flicked the switch, like, because I'm working with like loads of great, great people right now. But it's funny because see, when I'm maybe coaching and whatever realizations they have, a lot of the time, like, first of all, the buzz that you get from doing the session, because the person on the other side, they're leaving like you know, they have something to look forward to. They have goals to hit. But I'm leaving, like, I feel the exact same way. So it's like the two of us are on the same journey. Like, and we are, because I always say to them, their results are my results. If they don't put the work in, I'm getting nowhere. If I don't put the work in, well, they're definitely not getting anywhere. So it's like the two of us have to pull together. But a lot of the times during the sessions, you know, if someone says, for example, oh, do you know what? I need to stop making excuses and I need to get to the gym every morning, whatever. It's almost like they're saying, like, it's almost like it's my head telling me that. Like, if they're like, if they say, oh, I need to be maybe nicer to my girlfriend and cook her meals twice a week, I'm kind of thinking, are they talking to me? Are they, maybe I need to dress smarter, or maybe I need to like reach out to more family, or whatever they say. Like, a lot of times I'm thinking, I'm taking note. I'm like, I need to do that. And like, people have this kind of perceived thing, like, especially when I was at home, because you know yourself, with a small town syndrome, you'll get a lot of begrudgers. Like, there's I think in Jordan Peterson's book, he talks about the crabs in the bucket, how all the crabs have the ability to climb out of the bucket, but as soon as one crab's about to climb out, another crab will grab his leg and pull him back down. Or there's a thing called the tall poppy syndrome, where the tallest poppy will always be cut down to be the same size as the rest of the poppies. Like, I was in a couple of bars or places during the summer, and there'd be guys coming up to you, oh, you've it all figured out. You're a guru, or you're a fraud, or you're a this, that, and the other. And I'm just thinking, Jesus, I'm just like helping someone out, you know, like, who's looking for help. And you're here kind of either calling me a fraud or saying that I'm a guru. Like, I obviously don't have anything, like, everything or anything figured out. And I will never claim to have that. But if the teachings and the learnings that I've learned, if I can pass that on to the next person, it helps them, there's no harm. Like I kind of take pride in being a bit flawed. Like, I wouldn't like to be this, you know, like, bullshit artist, if you get me. And I don't want to come across as one either. Like, yeah, I will have slips, but like, I have those tools and techniques to help me back up. Like, so if I can teach you the same ones, maybe it'll help you along the way, and maybe then that'll have a knock-on effect on someone else. Like, so it's not about preaching that you are something. It's just about helping that next person in line, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, 100%. And there's a few things that you said there that resonated. And like, one, I, even on my podcast, like, certain things you said, if I'm at the beginning, I noticed that people would say things that would resonate with me, and you'd feel it, like, it's something that you're like, that's like, they're talking about something that's a message for you, like you said, and you're like, oh, that's something I need to take a note of. Or, and then I started to notice the same thing happening in real life with everyone I met. And then I started to just put my intention towards that, in every moment, every person is giving me some form of gift that I need in whatever interaction. Then I just saw more of them. And like I said, you end up just putting yourself on a stronger path of growth. And even when someone comes, like you said, like, then people that are saying these horrible things to you, even if something bad happens, I'm looking for, what's the opportunity in that for growth? What's the opportunity in that moment? That's actually, what's it trying to give me now? What's life trying to serve me? Like, life's the ultimate coach that's actually constantly giving you what you need, not always what you want. And I love the bit, and I wouldn't say it's boring, and I don't think you can say it enough, the story about walking to the road. And did you hear my story about the motorway? Have you heard that on the podcast?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, it's, yeah, powerful.
So yeah, and it's the same thing. So I'm at the beginning when I was sharing, it's like, oh, I don't want to keep saying this. And it's like, but that was a pivotal moment, and it was a dramatic moment. And when I've shared that in real life with people, and you get like that real intimacy connection, and it's not just talking to a camera on YouTube or on a podcast, is similar because you can see the person and talk to them. But it's like, sometimes that really helps someone. And then you realize the more you say it, the more you can actually take something from that event. And instead of being used by some form of traumatic experience, it becomes a useful experience. Then you can go, oh, I'm so happy I went through that. Because you didn't fail, you know, you didn't do it, you didn't end it all. You got to go to that limit, to that edge, so you can reflect and use it. And now you're using it to serve others. And listen, I think being of service is a sacred practice, you know, to actually be trying to just put some form of harmony into others selflessly. If you happen to get paid for it, you've got to live, you've got to do your, you've got to maintain keeping food, keeping your home, keeping your girlfriend, soon to be wife, in a life that's comfortable for both of you. So you have to make some money. And if you can make that through service, through actually aiding other people in their life to have less suffering, less stress, less pain, then I think that's a beautiful way to live, regardless of what anyone else says. Because a lot of people, like I said, they're just reflecting their own insecurities. But I think also just it's life reflecting to you what you don't need to say to yourself, if that makes sense.
Yeah. And like, you know, I was always installed in me, like, you know, in fairness, this summer, you should have seen spoiled by, you know, the Irish mum. There were steaks every day. But like, even growing up, like, dad, he would take the shirt off his back for any man. Like, I remember like trying to explain to someone in Abu Dhabi what he was like. And I was there like saying to him, you know, if I rang him now and said, listen, I have a friend called Tom. He needs $5,000 and he needs to be in Canada tomorrow morning. What can you help? He's like, well, I don't have $5,000 and I don't know, but I'll ring you back in an hour and we'll get him to Canada. And he would make it happen. Like, I remember like going into, he used to work behind the bar of one of the pubs at home, and we were doing the 12 pubs of Christmas, and it was the last bar we were going into, and my friend ordered like a round of drinks, and he started checking his pockets. We were only young, we were only 18, 19, he had no money left. I remember dad kind of leaning over and just like taking €50 out of his own pocket and putting into my friend's pocket just to make sure he'd be all right for the night. Like, and he's always like leaving people at home, making sure people were safe, like at his own detriment, like, and you know, that's a credit to him. Like, but also like on reflection on that, you need to be like, the name of this podcast, like the Selfish Podcast, a part of you needs to be selfish too. You know, if you keep giving, keep emptying your cup, like what's left in yours? Like if your cup's empty, you know, you're going to be no good to someone else down the line. Like, so I always say to like any of my clients, you know, you need to be positively selfish. You need to, like, if you're rushing home to, just for example, your girlfriend at for 6 o'clock because you're done work at 5:30, so she wants you home at 6, but you're going to be a grumpy fucker from 6 to midnight because you didn't get your workout in, it'd be more beneficial for you to come home at 7:30 after your workout and being the happiest person ever because your cup's full. Like, so you should always like fill up and do the things for yourself first, so you actually then are best able to actually do stuff for other people.
Yeah, no, 100%. And that is why this is the Selfish Podcast. and it's something that I struggled with most of my life. Being a carer for my mum from an early age, I became very self-sacrificing in all my own needs and wants, you know? So it was like, that's my number one responsibility. And because my mum had lost her, say, mental health, her physical health, I was always very consciously trying to attain, not get what she had and not become what she was. So it was like, I was always trying to eat clean, exercise, diet, but it was always a bit with a whip. I wasn't doing it for myself necessarily. It was like, so I'm more productive for her, so I'm more productive for my partner at the time, you know, just to get things done rather than, you know, you need to get yourself into a good place, into balance, take care of yourself, love yourself, work on yourself to actually enjoy life now rather than fix everyone else and just constantly be chasing other people's traumas and dramas and stress. Yeah, that was a big sort of transition in my life. So it's great that resonates with you as well. And I was just thinking, yeah, when you said about your dad, my dad doesn't come up that often in my thing, but he was an amazing dad for when he was there. He didn't get custody, he didn't get things, but your experience reminded me what you're saying with yours is there was really sticks out in my mind. It was a summer in England, really, really hot. And the bin men, the people that collect the trash, were coming round. And my dad quickly went inside. We was out in the front. He was like cleaning the car or something. And he came out with a tray of like ice cold drinks. And he's going over to all the bin men and saying, like, have a cold drink. And I remember just being like, what's he doing? I was really confused, but something felt good, but I was confused. And I was asking him, I was like, why are you giving them a drink? And he goes, it's hot because they're working, because they're picking up our rubbish. And I was like, but no one else is giving them a drink. No one else has come out. And it's like, it doesn't matter what no one else does. It's what you do sort of thing. And then a couple years ago, he rang me, and at the back of his garden's like a little bit of an alleyway. with like overgrown plants, and he could hear all this rustling there. So he went and got like a baseball bat. He's like, someone's trying to break into the garden. And then he said he was thinking of me and going, don't think of the worst all the time. Think of, just don't think that it's something bad. And he goes, he went round there, he peeped round. He goes, it was two homeless men making a bed in the bushes. So he goes, he went and made some sandwiches and got them a drink and took them some food round there. And he said he did that because of me. And I was laughing and I was like, yeah, but I'm doing things because of what you taught me. And I said, it was a funny cycle, you know, but it was, yeah, really interesting. So it just resonated. Sorry, and I interrupted. I think you was about to say something.
No, I lost my trail of thought. I was just kind of thinking more stories. Like, dad's an electrician, and I remember going around with him to like older people's houses, and you know, there'd be jobs for maybe 20, 30, 40, 50 or whatever. And like, maybe the older person, like, we were there doing a job, trying to pay him, and not. I was a kid, I was like, counting how many times. I was like, are you doing this for free, or what's the story? He's like, they looked after me, saying when we were growing up, or now it's time to look after the older. I don't know. There was something along those lines, and I thought that was class.
Yeah, I think it's really powerful. Like when we're a child, if you, I see some people don't gain the awareness all the time, but the littlest things your parents can do when you're certain ages can be so impactful to your whole life that it can be the subtlest little thing, and it's like can change everything. And you don't realize as the parent, I think for most people, that these little things, how much your child's a sponge and really taking in how you act, how you behave, how you're doing things, the littlest things, you know. And it's some of them things I think that really set in. And again,
I'm not giving any stories about mom. She, if she's watching this, she'd be like, oh, I did nothing for you, did I?
Yeah. Yeah, no. But we're getting near to the end. We'll try to keep this to an hour. I know you've got sessions coming up later. Where can people find you? And like, do you put other content online? Do you have a website? Where's the best place for people to connect with you?
The best place for people to connect with me at the minute is Instagram, Jonathan_Harkin. That's the, you know, you'll find my link tree there, which will give you a free, I have loads of free downloads for resources for anyone going through anything. But I've written a ebook, and it's a free download, and it's just, I basically tell kind of my own story, use my own struggles, to link them in with examples of real life of what other people are going through. And there's exercises there for you to work through and nice. Throughout the book. So it's kind of like an ebook/workbook with using my story as example. So it's a free download there. And then there's loads of, you know, other podcasts I was on and stuff like that. So I also have a Facebook group called Jonathan Harkin Mindset Coach. And as we speak, my website, Jonathan Harkin, and is underway. It's just being built as we speak.
Oh, nice. I'll make sure I put all the links in the description so people can go check out and follow you. I just have a few finishing sort of quick fire fun questions to ask, if you have time for them. Do you have time for them?
Go for it.
Is there anything else we missed that you feel like you wanted to get out on this show, or did we cover what you wanted?
To be honest, this could be a two-parter, three-parter, four-parter. You know, like, I'm sure we can always do it again, because like there's so many topics that we could delve into and like, you know, really go into greater detail. So like, I'll always be happy to come on and do this again with you.
Yeah, I keep that in mind, because I've got a few ideas. I've always got more ideas than I've got sort of tools and actions to actually implement them. I did think, because I've had so many guests that have been amazing in all different aspects, and there's so many that were different coaches, and I was thinking of like maybe doing one where it's actually a group podcast call with a coach that's a mindset, a coach that's a self-love coach, a coach that's this, to get a few different ones in on there, maybe do something like that sometime in the future. So I'll keep you in mind for that if that sounds interesting, and maybe just a one-to-one again if not, anyway, because it's nice talking to you. And for the quick fire questions, if you had to choose one, a cat or a dog?
Dog, every day, all day.
So you know when you're a dog or cat, but it's just a quick question, isn't it? What's your favorite color?
Blue. Nice. The green's in my head, but I said blue.
Might be all the green behind me, maybe. And the green heart. Yeah, well, it's What's your favorite sound or noise?
This has to be the sea, just because I grew up next to her. That wind, that's like not even a good day, that kind of breezy sea. Yeah, definitely.
Nice. And what sound or noise do you not love so much?
Arguments and shouting, not necessarily arguments, but loud shouting. Just everyone, just chill out and let's take it down a notch.
Yeah, just goes off topic to the questions. I just wondered when you said that in Dubai, when people are talking, is it a loud conversation? Because here in Spain, they can be very dramatic in their speech, very loud, and sometimes you can think people are having a full-on argument and they're not at all.
Well, like, Dubai is very fast paced, and like the thing about like living a fast paced lifestyle, we give so much away to social media, our phones, other people, relationships, our jobs, and like that's putting your body on a constant fight mode. You're always leaving the house or in a reactive state. So I find out here people more often than not are in a stressed, anxious, reactive state, and that's why I do things like breath work and the stuff I do throughout my coaching to kind of try and bring that down a notch. But it's so multicultural here. There's so many expats, so it really depends on the culture. Like I know the Arabic language, it's lovely. Like I'd love to be able to like fluently talk it, but when they're talking, it sounds aggressive, but it's actually very loving or something, because I know of a couple of my friends who speak it that. So it depends on the culture, depends on the language, just like where you are now.
Okay. What do you love about yourself?
Jeez, there's like I don't know. There's two things probably. I have a serious drive, and I don't know if this is a good thing, but like I push myself to limits and challenges and stuff. It's almost like I'm trying to go to that dark place purposely, to see how far I can go, whether it's a running challenge or like any kind of challenge. I'm all like, you can see it through my Instagram. I've done numerous challenges, running with weights vests, running the heat. But I'd say just because it's fresh in my mind, I'm a big softie. We were watching like a football documentary last night, and there was tears here. Like I'll start tearing up at a song or a thought, or like probably a lot of people might not know that, but yeah. I've become very soft over the last couple of years.
Nice. Oh, my stuff's blowing off the table, so it's a big giant gust of wind. Yeah, no, that's great. And maybe this will give you some insight, because I was always a very much I'd push myself in everything, and like I said, I felt like I realized I had this inner dictator that was sort of whipping me to do everything, and I would just push unbelievably hard on every aspect that I could. And I had to change that to more of a pull than a push. So instead of being pushed into things, it's like I can do things, but I'm going to be pulled into it, because I know now the growth that I'm going to get, why I'm doing it, the intention I'm putting into it. I don't need to push myself. It's not a push. Same as if you were, say, sitting somewhere, let's say a wedding, and someone comes up and tries to pull you to the dance floor, and you're like, no, don't pull me. I'm sorry, to push you onto the dance floor. They came out and just pushed you onto the dance floor. It's uncomfortable. But they grab your hand and pull you up. It's more comforting. I think it's giving yourself that self-comfort that you can be super ambitious and be really driven, but pull yourself into it. Don't push yourself. I think the push can be the aggression. And what do you love to see in other people?
Kindness, just looking after each other, just being we as we say in Ireland, being sound. That means you're nice, you're kind, you're a good person, you're sound.
Oh, nice. I've not heard that one. I've heard when someone said in England, like, oh, like your sound, and it's sort of like slang, but I didn't realize that's something in Ireland they say, to be in sound. I like the be in sound rather than just the way I've heard it in the past. Yeah, and the last question, what do you love about animals? This can be animals in nature, pets, however you want to perceive.
Just thinking of the dog we have now and the dog we had previous, loyalty in animals, and that's just thinking of dogs, I suppose, but loyalty.
Nice.
And like that, and that's probably a reflection on one of my highest values, I guess, but yeah, loyalty.
Yes, I'm a dog person, and I do love, and again, same with all my sort of, it's a high value for me, and from friendships to family, I think loyalty is something so so important to me in my life. Yeah, I love that about dogs. My dog is jumping in front of a giant giant dog the other day. The dog's huge. It was a big Spanish Mastiff, and it's like 4 or 5 times his size. And he made this dog tuck its tail between his legs and run off. And he was just protecting me because we was walking along, and it came out of nowhere. And it wasn't being aggressive, but he jumped in front of me and started chasing it. And he's a pincher, so he's not a big dog. He's not tiny, but he's not that big. But he would just put his life in to protect you, to look after you, to be aware, you know. So it's, yeah, amazing.
Yeah.
Jonathan, it's been great to connect with you and share, and look forward to sharing you with my audience. I wish you all the best on your ventures and your journey of serving and helping others. It's great to hear. And it's been, yeah, beautiful to talk to you and hear your story in life.
I appreciate it, man. And we'll definitely do it again sometime.
Well, enjoy your next client session. Hopefully I've not made you late, maybe just perfectly on time. And
perfectly on time.
Yeah, keep having a great day, and let's catch up in the future.
Take it easy.
Take it easy. Good luck. All right, bye. All right, Jonathan, I'm going to cancel it there, and I will message you, but this podcast will be out tomorrow night. If I can.
And
thank you so much for listening to this episode of The Selfish Podcast. Don't forget to like, comment, share, and leave a review if you can. It really helps other people find the content. And if you gain something from this, maybe someone else will too. I truly appreciate you being here. I'm grateful for every single one of you. You inspire me to continue to create content on YouTube, podcast, and as many platforms as I can online. So thank you so much. Big thank you to my patrons out there. If it wasn't for you, I wouldn't be online. If you'd like to become a patron, go to patreon.com/LukeGreenheart. All the links will be in the description. And don't forget, you can get my free copy of my book, The Self, Who Am I? Which gives clarity to identity and direction to your purpose through beautiful insights and perception. So go check that out. You can get it free at lukegreenheart.com/free. Remember, links in the description. It's also available as a paperback on Amazon. Have a beautiful day. I truly appreciate you. Love life. Love yourself. Love others. Thank you again for being here.